I told Jeff up front, I said, this is one of my favorite scriptures. Verse 9 comes to my mind a lot, but I'm sure it comes to your mind a lot also. But I thought, as I looked at that, I thought, even though we can associate with verse 9, how much can we always associate with verse 10? Do we ever get under that intense persecution like Paul did? But no matter what our situation, these verses apply to us. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 1 to 10. It is not expedient for me, doubtless, to glory. I will come to visions and revelations of the Lord. I know a man in Christ above 14 years ago, whether in the body, I cannot tell, or whether out of the body, I cannot tell. God knoweth. Such an one called up to the third heaven. And I knew such a man, whether in the body or out of the body, I cannot tell. God knoweth. How that he was called up into paradise and heard unspeakable words, which it is not lawful for a man to utter. Of such an one will I glory, yet of myself I will not glory, but in mine infirmities. For though I would desire to glory, I shall not be a fool, for I will say the truth. But now I forbear, lest any man should think of me above that which he seeth me to be, or that he heareth of me, and lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelation, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. For this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart from me. And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasures in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecution, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then am I strong. With these thoughts on our mind, those who are able, let's kneel for prayer.
Brother Paul preached this morning from Philippians chapter 4, and he talked about having one's emotions moderated by Christ, the disciplined person whose emotions are moderated by Christ. And one of the verses that he read was verse 9. When the Apostle Paul says that the things that you have seen and you have heard of me, do those things. And that's kind of what we're doing tonight, is using something from the life of the Apostle Paul as an illustration, an object lesson of what it means to have your emotions and your thoughts guided by Christ and under his control. We're looking tonight at Paul's thorn in the flesh, which is discussed here in this 12th chapter of Paul's letter to 2 Corinthians. And this is something that, as I've been studying it, it's been a challenge to me personally. I've kind of shrink away from part of this. There are some things in this chapter that I find a little bit, and especially in this section here, that I find a little bit difficult to understand as far as what Paul was trying to say. But those are not the main points that he's making here. Someone says often the main things are the plain things and the plain things are the main things, and that's the way it is in our passage tonight. But I shrink from this a little bit more because I look at the way the Apostle Paul handled the things that happened to him, and I compare that to myself and what has happened to me and my own attitude toward hardship. And David Jeremiah said one time that you shouldn't preach on something that you either haven't experienced or you're not willing to experience. And so when I talk about undergoing hardship for Christ and doing it with a mind and one's emotions that are moderated by Christ, I realize the weight of that. Sometimes it seems like when you pray for something, God gives it to you in a way that you didn't expect. You pray for humility, and he gives it to you by humiliating you. And that's often the way those things happen. And we know that his ways are right, but at the same time, the flesh kind of shrinks from that when we anticipate it. But we're looking at that tonight, and we want to see how Paul's response to his thorn in the flesh will show us how to receive spiritual power through the trials that we undergo. And the context of what we're looking at is chapters 10 through 13 of his letter to 2 Corinthians. Paul had addressed some of the difficulties that have arisen between him and the church there at Corinth, and one of the problems that they have between them is that other men have come to Corinth since Paul has left, and they've begun teaching, and Paul calls them false apostles in verse 13 of chapter 11. He says they're false apostles, and he says they've brought another gospel in verse 4 of chapter 11. And from some of the things that we read of what Paul is saying here, it sounds like when they came to the Corinthians, they were claiming to have done all these great things, and they were claiming to have all this power. And it sounds like they're also defaming Paul and his ministry to the Corinthians. They said that he wrote powerful letters, but when he showed up in person and started talking, they said his preaching was weak, he was nothing to look at. And at the same time, Paul says that he implies that these men were taking advantage of the Corinthians. Verse 20 of chapter 11, it sounds like that these men who had come in were receiving financial gain from the Corinthian church, that they were putting themselves above the Corinthians in the church, and that they were even insulting them to some extent. And so Paul needs to defend his ministry to the church at Corinth. And he's reminding the Corinthians of all of the things that he has undergone for Christ. And he's talking about this, and he's using the word boasting. And he's using it not completely as if he were really boasting in the sense that we would go out and maybe start boasting about how, you know, my truck is faster than your truck, and the deer that I just shot is bigger than the deer that you shot, and things like that. It's partly that, but he's also using the word partly satirically to point out that that's really what these men were doing. But he is trying to set forth his credentials by saying, these are the things, these are the reasons why I'm in this ministry, why I am an apostle. Now, these others apparently were boasting of their accomplishments and their training and their heritage and all of those things. And Paul could have done that if he had wanted to. And he does talk in his letter to, I believe it's the Galatians, about all of his heritage and his wonderful background among the Jews. And he's not doing that here. Instead, he says if he's going to boast about anything, if he's going to say, look what I have, he's going to boast about the things which show his own weaknesses. Not his accomplishments, and not his heritage, and not his strengths. He's going to tell them about the instances from his own ministry where his own strength had been limited and his own weakness had been displayed. And so he starts listing in verses 23 through 33 all of the different trials that he has gone through. He talks about how he has been beaten and how he has been whipped and how he has been stoned and shipwrecked and how he's been in peril from all of these different occasions and circumstances. He talks about how he has been shipwrecked, stranded, everything else. And I'm just looking here, it was in his letter to the Philippians that he listed his heritage and said it was nothing, not the Galatians. But he goes through this list of all of these things that he's gone through, and these are not occasions which show his power or his strength. These are times when Paul's own power and strength wasn't enough. He wasn't able to stand up to the people who stoned him. And he was shipwrecked because of weakness. And all of these things show his weaknesses and his limitations. And the point of doing this, he says, is to show how these occasions didn't display Paul's strength, but they displayed Christ's strength in Paul. And now in verses 1 through 4 of the text that we're looking at, he talks about this revelation that someone has received. And when I read over verse 1, I have a little trouble following that and fitting it into the context. And I think part of that is because of the differences in punctuation, maybe. But if you look in modern translations, for example, the ESV says, "I must go on boasting. Although there is nothing to be gained by it, I will go on to visions and revelations of the Lord." And then in verses 2 and 3, he talks about this man in Christ that he had known about 14 years ago. And he speaks of this man in the third person, as if it's someone else. He says, "I knew a man in Christ," and he says it again in verse 3, "I knew such a man." Who was this? He's talking about it like it's someone else, but apparently it was Paul himself, because if you look in verse 7, he says, "Lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, lest I should be exalted above measure." Now, there wouldn't have been any reason for Paul to have been given the thorn in the flesh if he was not the one who had received the revelation that could have resulted in him being overly exalted. Well, why didn't he just say, "I was caught up to the third heaven," or "I was caught up to paradise"? Well, that would have risked exactly the thing that he was trying to avoid, which was his own glory and exaltation. And so he just wanted to speak hypothetically. It's as if he's saying, suppose there was this man that I knew 14 years ago. He was caught up to heaven. He was caught up to paradise, and he saw things there, Paul says, that he can't repeat. This place where he was taken, and he says it doesn't know whether it was a physical transportation of his body there or whether it was just in spirit, like the Apostle John said, he was taken in the spirit. This was the same place that Jesus said to the thief on the cross, "Today you will be with me in paradise." And the things that he heard there and the things that he saw, he says they're inexpressible. He can't repeat them, and it's not lawful for him even to repeat them. Probably a couple of meanings there. One would be that human language is insufficient to fully describe everything that was seen in this vision. And the other would be that there were things that were seen and heard there which aren't to be known outside of there. When John was given his revelation, there was at least one instance when he was told, he says he was about to write what he had heard, and the angel said, "Don't write those things that you have heard, seal them up." Both of those are probably what is meant here. We don't know when this happened. It could have been at a time possibly when Paul was in Arabia by himself. Some think that this may have actually happened one of the times that Paul was stoned. It said that they thought he was dead, but then he got up and walked back into town. And it may have been during that instance. We don't know for certain. But the main point of what Paul is going to talk about isn't really this vision. So he doesn't spend a lot of time on this. He just goes on, but it is worth thinking about here. Paul received this vision. He had seen into paradise, and it was a glorious experience to him, and I believe that was much of what carried Paul through the rest of the trials that he underwent. Think of all of the things that Paul went through. Would you or I want to go through any of those things if there was no purpose to it? When Paul was writing about the resurrection in 1 Corinthians 15, he said, "If in this life only we have hope in Christ, we are of all men most miserable." And that would have been true of Paul. If he did not have that hope, he would have been a miserable man because of all of the deprivations that he suffered and all of the hardships that he endured. But he had that vision of paradise, and it carried him through. I was thinking of what I've often read of soldiers in past wars before the days of Facebook and Skype, When they would go off to war, those of them who were married would often take a picture of their wives with them and keep it with them wherever they went. And in the time of greatest danger or anxiety, before they knew they were going to have to go into battle, take out that picture of their wives and look at that. And it was that that sustained them and carried them through and gave them hope and helped them to continue fighting. What if we had a greater vision of heaven and of what awaits us in our reward than we do? Wouldn't that help to sustain me better through the things that I suffer and through my trials? And then Paul goes on to describe the infirmity that he had received in verses 5 through 7. And I'm going to paraphrase this. In my own words, I believe that this is what he is saying in verses 5 through 7. Now, referencing back this man who has had this heavenly experience. If someone has an experience like this, that's something to boast about. But for myself, I would rather boast about my weaknesses. Even though, if I did decide to boast about things like this personally, I wouldn't be speaking foolishly, I would just be telling the truth. But I won't do that, because I'm really nothing special in myself, and I don't want people to think more highly of me than they should. So to keep me from being put on a pedestal, either by myself or by others, I was given a thorn in the flesh. Now, what was this thorn in the flesh? Of course, it's intended to convey the idea of something that was unpleasant. No one would want to have a thorn that would be stuck somewhere in your body. If you've ever had that happen to you, you know how it feels, and you know it's uncomfortable, and you want it removed as soon as you can. I don't know if it was last year or the year before, there was a morning I was downstairs, hadn't turned on the lights yet, and I leaned into the window to raise the window, and we had this potted hibiscus sitting there in the window, and I leaned right into one of the little branches of the hibiscus into my eye, and something stuck there, and I couldn't see it. It's a little hard to see anything in your own eye when you can hardly hold it open, and I managed to get to the doctor that morning, and she looked at my eye and told me she couldn't see anything. Well, I knew there was something there. I wanted it out of there. And I think that's the way it would have been here for Paul. This thorn in the flesh was an uncomfortable, unpleasant, painful experience. And of course, he wanted it removed. But what was it? Some have said before that it was his suffering and persecution. I think that's probably not what's indicated here. Persecution was not unique to Paul. But it seems that this infirmity that he received was unique to him, something that others did not receive. Others have said that it was doubt or a temptation to a particular evil. And again, those are not unique to Paul, although perhaps the degree to which he suffered them might have been unique. But I don't see any indication of that in the rest of his writings. And why would he have been refused relief if he had asked to be relieved of doubt or of temptation to evil? And I think the most natural interpretation is just that he suffered some kind of ongoing physical ailment or weakness. It says, in the flesh. And that seems to be the most natural interpretation here. And it was something that did not go away. It was ongoing. He continued to suffer from it. And as far as we know, he continued to suffer from it until his death. But what was it? There's some speculation here. Actually, all of this is speculation to some extent, but there are some clues that we can see. Some have said possibly epilepsy. I'm not sure where they get that. Others have suggested he had been stricken with malaria. And again, I'm not sure where that came from. But my opinion is that, and the opinion of many is that it had something to do with his eyes or his eyesight. And some of the reasons why I would say this, back in Acts chapter 23, when Paul was on trial before the Sanhedrin, Luke records that the high priest Ananias told those who were sitting next to Paul to strike him on the mouth. And Paul said, "God will strike you, you whitewashed wall." And the people who overheard that said to him, "Do you realize that you're talking to the high priest like that?" And he says in verse 5 of chapter 23, "I wist not, brethren, that he was the high priest." I didn't know that was the high priest. And I'm assuming from that that he was unable to see that it was Ananias. Other indications in Galatians chapter 4, verse 13, he says to the Galatians, "Ye know how through infirmity of the flesh I preached the gospel unto you at the first." So when Paul came to the Galatians, there was something, he had some physical infirmity at that time. "And my temptation which was in the flesh, ye despised not, nor rejected, but received me as an angel of God, even as Christ Jesus. Where is then the blessedness ye spake of? For I bear you record that, if it had been possible, ye would have plucked out your own eyes and have given them to me." And so it would seem that there was something wrong with his eyes at the time that he came to the Galatians, and that they would have gladly given up their eyesight in order for him to have received his. And again, at the end of his letter to the Galatians, in chapter 6, verse 11, he says, "Ye see how large a letter I have written unto you with mine own hand." Large letters in his own handwriting. Now, some have said that this was just because he wanted to call emphasis to what he was ready to finish the letter with, the same as someone will press the caps lock button before they type something that they really want to be caught by everybody. But I think it was large handwriting because it was difficult for him to see. But it was a weakness in the flesh that he had, and it was something which caused him problems. And he calls it the messenger of Satan. Now, I think there's some figurative language here, and yet there's also an element behind it that really is as he's writing it. I don't believe that there was an actual messenger who came to Paul from Satan and gave him this thorn in the flesh. On the other hand, I do think that this probably was similar to Job's experience in his affliction. When Job was afflicted, it was with God's permission, but it was at the hand of Satan that he received his afflictions. And it was permitted by God to accomplish his own purposes, but Satan thought that he was doing what he wanted to do. Satan, in his own malevolence, thought he was doing injury to Saul, or to Paul. And I thought about that, you know, Paul or Satan would have had a lot of personal familiarity with Paul at this point, and not just since his conversion, because I believe that before Paul's conversion, he really was doing the work of Satan in opposing the church and casting the members of the church into prison and persecuting them. And so previously, Paul had been his own messenger of Satan, really. In a way, Satan could have looked at him as a turncoat. You were doing my work, and now you've gone over to the other side, and now Satan says, "I'm going to avenge myself on you." I think there was, and again, this is speculation reading into it, but I believe that's really what was going on here. But the irony is that even when Satan thought he was injuring Paul, God was using it to accomplish his own purposes. And Paul says that this was done to buffet me. Now, that's not a light word there. That's the same word that is used to describe the soldiers striking Jesus during his trial. And maybe I have overlooked before what this infirmity really would have meant to Paul. Supposing that it was an affliction in his eyes and something that hindered his eyesight, those of you here who have glasses, just take them off for a little bit and imagine spending the rest of your life like that. I wouldn't be driving home tonight if I didn't have my glasses. There are a lot of things that I wouldn't be able to do, it would have been extremely difficult for me to have studied for this message, because in order for me to actually read my notes without glasses and see them clearly, I have to get them up to that point. And I think Paul's may have even been worse, I don't know. But think about the hindrance that would have been to him. He was a scholar. He was used to reading and writing all the time. And he needed to travel around and he needed to work. And so it was something that would greatly have restricted him and caused problems for him. And especially if there were discomfort or pain that accompanied it. So it buffeted him. And then he starts talking about the reason why he had been given this thorn in the flesh. He says, lest I should be exalted above measure, so that I would not be thought of more highly than I should be. To keep him humble, to keep others from esteeming him too lightly. Whatever this thorn in the flesh was, it forced Paul to be dependent on others in a way that he would not otherwise have been. And it was a continual reminder to himself and to others of his weaknesses, of his limitations. And that, remember, is what he said he was going to boast about. His weaknesses and his limitations. And here is one of them. This thorn in the flesh that is hindering him and that is buffeting him. If it was Paul's eyes, I think that would have been a continual reminder to him of the 3 days that he had spent completely blind after his conversion. And that would have been a continuing reminder of what he had done before his conversion, what he had been doing on that Damascus road when he was struck down. And it would have continually reminded him that even though he was an apostle and he had had this heavenly revelation and he was now going around taking the message of the gospel to sinners, he was himself still only a sinner apart from Christ. So Paul could have become proud, or he could have received too much honor because of this revelation that he had received. So God had allowed him to be afflicted to bring him low. It's natural for us to elevate ourselves above others. It's natural for us to want to think of ourselves as being more capable than others and stronger than others. And we say, well, I'd never do that. Or if I had done that, here's how I'd have done it. And it's natural for us to want other people to recognize us and elevate us and show their esteem for us. But it was because of that danger that Paul was given this thorn in the flesh. And it may be that for each of us, we're going to receive a weakness to remind us that we're really no different than anybody else and no better than anyone else. Now in verses 8 through 10, we see Paul's response to this. We see his weakness and his strength. Paul requested 3 times that this infirmity would be taken away from him. And I've said before, I don't think these were light requests. Remember that Paul had seen miracles worked at his hand. He had seen that man raised up again who had fallen out of that window and had been taken up dead. And he had seen the sick healed at his hand. And Paul knew that, and he knew that he had prayed for others, and so now he prays for his own healing. And that prayer is not answered for himself. Now, how would you and I receive that? If God had given grace through us to heal others, and yet when we prayed for healing for ourselves, he denied it, I think that would probably shake me for a while. That you'll do these things for other people through me, but you won't do it for me? And so he prayed 3 times that it would be taken from him. And I don't believe it was just 3 times like today and then tomorrow and then Tuesday. I believe it was three times with some space and some time for thought in between. And it says that he besought the Lord. This word means that he called out for help. You think of someone who is in trouble and they need help somewhere. Maybe you're working alone and you're trying to lift something and it starts slipping and it's falling and you're trying to catch it and keep it from falling all the way down. And you call out for help and you need somebody to come quickly and assist you with that and take some of the burden. That's the idea here behind the word that Paul used. He says, it's not just a request for something that he desired. This wasn't just the child in the checkout line begging for candy. This was the earnest plea of someone seeking help from the one who can give it. And that earnest plea was denied. Verse 9. He, that is the Lord, said unto me, and it's implied, no, it won't be taken from you. Instead, he said, my grace is sufficient for thee. And the way Paul writes this here when he says, he has said, or he said unto me, that is in the perfect tense. He said it once, but his answer continues to be the same. Even though the answer to the request for healing was no, this answer, this part, continues to be the answer. My grace is sufficient for thee. Wasn't just sufficient for Paul at the time that he asked and was denied. It continues to be sufficient for him. And he said, my strength is made perfect in weakness, and it continues to be made perfect in weakness. Why was he denied? Well, Paul did understand by the time that he wrote this. I don't know if Paul understood it right away. I think he had to spend some time on it. He knew now that he needed a continual reminder that he was no better than others, and that he needed Christ's strength as much as others. He was also denied because God wanted to display his power, not Paul's power. The Lord's grace would be enough when Paul's strength wouldn't be enough. This is the miraculous, innate power of the risen Christ. It's Christ's power in action through Paul. And Knox translated this as, my strength finds its full scope in thy weakness. When Paul was incapable of doing something, God's power would be given space to exert itself. Paul's weakness was the opportunity for God to show his strength. And Paul acknowledging his weakness opened the way for Christ's power in his life. He says, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. This word that's used here is the same that John used in chapter 1, verse 14, when he says that the word was made flesh and dwelt among us. Literally, the word pitched his tent among us. Except right here, there is an additional part to it that says over. And so Paul is saying, the power of Christ is spread over me like someone pitching a tent or setting up a tent or a canopy. Now, in our time, when we set up a tent, it's because we're going camping and we're not going to stay there very long. But many of the tents that would have been seen in Paul's day were homes, in effect. Abraham lived in a tent. Jacob lived in a tent. Isaac lived in a tent. And yes, they were portable, but they didn't just pick them up and move them every morning. It was a bigger process than that. That was going to be the place that you stayed for a while. And so Christ's power is going to stay with Paul. It's going to dwell with Paul because of his weaknesses. When Paul knew that he was weak, the power of Christ made its home with him and was spread over him. Paul needed to learn to live for Christ, and now he understands that it's his privilege, he says, to glorify Christ even at the cost of personal suffering. So how did he respond? He said, "Most gladly will I rather glory in my infirmities." And I don't think that's an exaggeration there when he says most gladly. I will gladly tell everyone about my limitations and my weaknesses, because it's because of my limitations and my weaknesses that Christ's power rests on me. I think probably all of us desire greater spiritual strength, whether it's because we want to have greater faith, that we would not doubt God, we wouldn't doubt His word, His promises, whether we want to have greater spiritual strength to overcome temptation or trials, not to be shaken by them. I think we all want more power spiritually. But to what extent do we desire that power? Am I willing, are we willing to accept infirmities and weaknesses and limitations in order to receive spiritual strength? This is where I start examining myself and comparing myself to Paul and realizing that in my flesh, that is something that frankly kind of frightens me. I want the power of Christ and I want His strength. But what if it came at the price that Paul had to pay? I know in my mind and in my heart that it's worth it, but the flesh shrinks back from that. And how do we respond when our prayers are denied? The things that we have prayed most earnestly for and continued to pray repeatedly, and yet the answer continues to be no. Just trust my grace. In her books, The Mitford Chronicles, Jen Caron often talks about the prayer that never fails. And that prayer is, "Thy will be done." And it's the prayer that never fails, but it's often the prayer that's hardest to come. To pray that God's will and not mine would be done. How do we respond when our prayers are denied? But Paul embraced his infirmities. Verse 10, he says, "Therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake." And so now he is broadening the application, not just from this one thorn in the flesh, this one physical infirmity that he was describing. He's broadening it to include all of these other things that have happened as a result of his witness for Christ. Sufferings and weaknesses, probably physical limitations, physical and restrictions. I imagine that Paul had a lot of aches and pains when he got up in the morning, when you consider all of the beatings that he had gone through because of Christ. He talks about the reproaches. Paul knew what it was to be insulted, and sometimes pretty severely, in ways that we never have been. Paul knew necessity. He had talked in chapter 11 about the hardships that he had undergone and the things that he had lacked. He had been cold and he had been hungry and he had been thirsty and he had been lacking proper shelter and clothing. And he says the persecutions, the attacks against his person for the cause of Christ, but he says, "I take pleasure in them." Now there are things that we take pleasure in. If you're working outside on a cold day and you come in and it's warm and there's a good meal, hot meal ready for you, you take pleasure in that. I don't think that that's the kind of pleasure that Paul is talking about here, that when he was beaten, it felt good to him. The word that is used here, though, indicates that he willingly accepted these things that happened to him. He agreed with them and with their purpose. He submitted himself to them. And it wasn't just an unwilling submission where he had to. He even embraced their purpose. Their purpose was to display Christ's power and to glorify Christ. And because of that, He says, I embrace these things. I welcome them when they come because I know what they're going to result in. I was present at the birth of both of my children, and obviously I was only an observer for that, but it was pretty clear to me that it wasn't a pleasant experience. Jesus used this illustration himself. There is pain involved in labor and childbirth, and it's difficult. But the moment the child is born and is handed to his mother, it looks as if the mother has already begun to forget what she underwent in order to receive that child into her arms. That's the idea of what Paul is saying here. Yes, I have gone through these things, but I embrace them and I willingly accept them because I know what is going to result from them. From these weaknesses, from these hardships that I go through, he says, Christ's power is going to be displayed. And so I will glory in my infirmities. I will tell other people about my weaknesses so that God and Christ can be glorified. I was thinking of a song as I wrote this sermon. So I looked up the song and I found a little bit of information about the author. And it was interesting because the first thing that I saw before I read her biography was a picture of her sitting in a wheelchair. Her name was Annie Johnson Flint. When she was 3 years old, her mother died, giving birth to Annie's younger sister. And then, not long after that, her father also died. She and her sister were willed by her father to another family, the Flint family, who raised them in the Baptist church. She accepted Christ, she joined the church, and she had an optimistic outlook. She was a cheerful person. After high school, she started teaching, and it was in her second year of teaching that she was stricken with arthritis. And it wasn't long until her arthritis had crippled her to the extent that she could do very little. She couldn't walk anymore, apparently. That's why she was in the wheelchair. It was difficult for her to write, but she began writing poetry. And then she was illustrating cards, and some of her poems were picked up by publishers. It says, she loved to give to others, but was reluctant to receive, even though she suffered great times of trial and testing. Eventually, she gained new understanding and learned how to share the hard moments of her life with others who could not understand the hardships of their lives. She became convinced that God intended to glorify himself through her in her weak earthen vessel, and like Paul, she gained real assurance and could say with the apostle the promise granted to him, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. She could also say with Paul, most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. She believed that God had laid her aside for a purpose, even though that purpose was obscure to her at times. The marvelous thing is that Annie's faith never faltered, and that she was at all times able to say, thy will be done. And this is the song that she wrote. He giveth more grace as our burdens grow greater. He sendeth more strength as our labors increase. To added afflictions, he addeth his mercy. To multiplied trials, he multiplies peace. When we have exhausted our store of endurance, when our strength has failed ere the day is half done, when we reach the end of our hoarded resources, our Father's full giving is only begun. Fear not that thy need shall exceed his provision. Our God ever yearns his resources to share. Lean hard on the arm everlasting, availing. The Father, both thee and thy load, will upbear. His love has no limits, his grace has no measure, his power no boundary known unto men. For out of his infinite riches in Jesus, he giveth and giveth and giveth again.
I believe we can all say again that we have been blessed this morning and this evening. I want to thank our brethren again for being used and for the messages that we've heard. The messages we've heard today were both from the writings of the Apostle Paul. We've been studying a good bit about him here in our Sunday school lessons here of late, how he started churches and how he trained men to teach others to spread the gospel. The Apostle Paul was a remarkable man. And as I was listening to the message tonight, I thought, I think he wrote 13 books of the New Testament. I think I have that counted right, not counting Hebrews. I guess we're not sure who wrote Hebrews, but he wrote so much of the New Testament. He was a remarkable man. And as I was thinking about things he wrote, I was reminded of the first verse of chapter 11 of Corinthians. And that is, be ye followers of me as I also am of Christ. And that I think Paul would tell us that today. Let's keep on following him as far as he followed Christ. We might pray that we be faithful to that. Let's stand for prayer.